Which Way LA is made possible in part by the Ralph M. Parsons Foundation, the Nathan Cummings Foundation, the Rosalind and Arthur Gilbert Foundation, and the John Randolph Haynes and Dora Haynes Foundation, which supports study and research into policy issues of the Los Angeles region.
Patriotism and politics. Do symbols of pride in America get in the way of real debate? I'm Lawrence O'Donnell, sitting in for Warren Olney, and this is Which Way LA, KCRW's ongoing series on the issues Southern Californians care about. Barack Obama's patriotism is questioned because he doesn't wear an American flag pin on his lapel. His pastor's sermons are called un-American. Congressional votes on anti-flag-burning bills are considered tests of patriotism, even though the Supreme Court says flag-burning is constitutionally protected speech. Do nationalism and patriotism illuminate or confuse political dialogue in America? Does the notion of American exceptionalism control our politics? First, here's the news. I'm Lawrence O'Donnell, sitting in for Warren Olney, back with Which Way LA on KCRW. Patriotism and politics. The furor over Barack Obama's church has pushed his presidential campaign into the most dangerous possible political territory. Questions about his patriotism. Does the Founding Fathers' notion of American exceptionalism control our politics? How does the expression of American patriotism compare to displays of patriotism in other countries? Do our symbols of patriotism get in the way of real political debate? Our first guest is Gary Gerstle, professor of history at Vanderbilt University. His books include American Crucible, Race and Nation in the 20th Century, and Working Class Americanism. Professor Gerstle, when you see the controversy that's erupted this year about should a presidential candidate wear an American flag pin on his lapel, and if he doesn't, what does that mean? Is that something that the Founding Fathers would be surprised by or think, well, yeah, sure, why aren't you wearing that pin?
Well, I'm not sure about the Founding Fathers, but certainly the concern about the patriotism of Americans goes back to the very beginning of America. America's founding was somewhat different than that of other nations. Unlike many nations, America's original claim to nationhood was not based on peoplehood or ethnicity, but on a series of ideas. All men are created equal, life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness, and also the idea of republicanism, the notion that people rule in circumstances that encourage liberty. This is a very idealistic basis of nationhood, and for that reason, this basis of nationhood from the Founding Fathers on was always thought to be very fragile. The history of republics was not thought to be very promising, of people ruling in circumstances in which liberty would flourish. And there was a sense from the very beginning that if Americans did not live up to their ideals, the damage could be very serious and the nation could perish. And so in America, there has always been a tremendous emphasis on being patriotic, an intensity of patriotism that is not characteristic in the same way of other countries. And if you weren't sufficiently patriotic, you could be depicted as un-American, a word with very few parallels in other countries. The French really don't have a category of un-French. The Chinese don't really have a category of un-Chinese. And protesters and dissenters and reformers who refuse to be patriotic themselves, and there have been many in American history, and they have made important contributions, they have always been on somewhat shaky ground.
Could a social psychiatrist looking at American patriotism from perhaps, say, Montreal, for example, think that might be some insecurity that's being represented in this aggressive presentation of patriotism?
I think so. I think that's how many foreigners do react to what they see in America today. And also, it's one thing to fear the fragility of American patriotism in 1780, 1790, 1800, when this country was a fledgling country and republic. It's quite another thing and a difficulty for foreigners to understand that sense of security today, when America, for despite all its problems and being bogged down in this very costly war, remains arguably the most powerful country on the face of the earth. And so why so much insecurity in How does that exactly, is that associated with so much power? I think this is one of the puzzles for foreigners to figure out. And what I'm suggesting is that it's a complex of attitudes about the fragility of one's country that do go back to America's very founding.
Well, let's get a foreign perspective now from John O'Sullivan. He is the editor-at-large for National Review. He is now working for Radio Free Europe in Prague. He's a former advisor to Prime Minister Margaret Thatcher. John O'Sullivan, from the outsider's perspective, what does American patriotism look like to you?
Well, I'm not entirely an outsider because I've lived in America for most of the last 20 years. I'm married to an American and and pay American taxes. But it seems to me that I half agree and half disagree with what the last speaker has been saying. Of course, I think that there are creedal elements in the American national identity which are not don't exist or not so strongly existing in other national identities, though the French one approaches them. But there are reasons for this. First of all, the American Revolution meant that the Americans had to explain to the world why it was they were throwing off the allegiance to the British Crown, which of course was done very eloquently in the Declaration of Independence. But at the same time, the Americans felt themselves to be, at the time, as John Jay said, one people. I don't think that was an ethnic identity, as a matter of fact, and certainly not a racial one. I think it was a much more of a cultural identity. And in a sense, the division in national identities is not between America and the rest of the world, the division in the nature of patriotism, but very much more between the English-speaking world and the continental countries. The definition of national identity, nationalism, a harder form of patriotism in continental Europe, is very much an ethnic one. And that does create enormous difficulties for people who are not part of the ethnos when they are citizens of the state. In the English-speaking world, despite all the difficulties of racism and the past slavery and so on, there has been in the English-speaking world, in America very strongly, but also in Australia, and to a degree in Britain, a combination of openness and trust, which has enabled the incorporation of one minority, one immigrant group, one new arrival after another, sometimes after struggles, but in historical terms, in a very short time, the incorporation of new people into the nation. And that is what I think distinguishes American patriotism. I'm not so convinced, by the way, that it's fragile or insecure, although the Canadians might very well think it was aggressive, because there have, in fact, been two American attempts to invade Canada.
And John O'Sullivan, from the British perspective, is there something to be said? I'll put it this way. What is the effect on patriotism when living in a country that over time has had a worldwide empire constantly shrinking, being reduced either through revolution or through peaceful retreat into this much smaller version now of what we think of as the United Kingdom? Is there a humbling process in that century of reduction of the empire that leaves the British in a much more modest tone when it comes to these kinds of things?
What I think has been much more traumatic for the British is the internal problem that they have somehow ceased to have any pride in themselves. And this, the British identity, which was really quite strong as recently as, say, 1970, is now a kind of a nullity, which has created problems not only for the British, of which they are well aware, but also for immigrants. Because those four young men, for example, who planted bombs on the subway in London, they might well have become, in the past, as many as, in fact, the father of one of them did, might have become quite proud Britons, happy to be soldiers of the Queen. Now, the fact that their problems were caused in part by the implosion of British identity, an implosion which is common throughout Europe. It's partly the result of an attempt to create a supranational European identity, which has not succeeded, but which has resulted in draining any significance out of the national identities of the constituent European countries. So This creates enormous psychological problems, both for the people themselves and for the immigrant groups who come to the country and find that there's nothing to assimilate to, whereas in America there still is. I would say that everyone is now talking in Britain about the crisis of Britishness. It's nothing much to do with the retreat from empire. It's much more to do with failing to maintain a sense of pride in past achievements, which is partly induced by government because they want to, in a sense, get the British to move away from being proud of themselves and more towards being proud of being Europeans. But as I say, that new European identity has significantly failed to take.
We've been talking about American politics and patriotism with John O'Sullivan, editor-at-large for the National Review. Joining us now is Todd Gitlin, professor of journalism and sociology at Columbia University. His latest book is The Bulldozer and the Big Tent, Blind Republicans, Lame Democrats, and the Recovery of American Ideals. Todd Gitlin, it seems foremost in American ideals is the notion of patriotism.
Yes, it all depends on what the meaning of is. the patriot is the patriot somebody who hoists the biggest flag, or the one who is most committed to the national good? Can we judge the one by the other? The sort of patriotism that I think Obama stands for in telling a certain story, of which conveniently he is the beneficiary, is a story that's quite different from the one told by the wearing of a lapel pin. And I think if I can maybe push the point a little farther, I think that what he's proposing is a sort of patriotism of the heart. It's patriotism that is tested by the place one finds for oneself in an American story, the main features of which are that people are constantly becoming American, and that Americanness or Americanism is something that you work out as you go along, and that's because we are, as Gary Gerstle was saying, we are a people who affiliate to Americanness rather than having it thrust upon us. And you know, but I think you know, it's very difficult in America to get away from the sometimes poisonous and sometimes heartfelt vigor of patriotism. Even those who've opposed American policies have been, in general, quite insistent that they are patriots. No less than Mark Twain said something like this at a time when he opposed America's war against Spain. He said, "Patriotism is supporting your country all the time and your government when it deserves it." So this distinction between the nation, which deserves one's fealty because of its values, and patriotism as a sort of a blank check to a government, that distinction is more than a century old.
In our politics, our national politics, certainly, Todd Gitlin, it had become mandatory, virtually mandatory, post-World War II, to seek a seat in the Senate, or certainly to pursue the presidency, that you be a military veteran. And
right,
we now have lost most of them from our field of presidential candidates. I believe, if memory serves, we had probably only one in the total field from both Democrats and Republicans this year, and he remains John McCain. Is the American flag lapel pin a phenomenon that results from a certain insecurity on the part of those kinds of elected officials that they did
Excellent
not serve
question.
For
yeah.
1 minute in the military?
Absolutely. I mean, if ever there were a case of protesting too much, I think this is it. And the reason, of course, why the military experience is lacking is that that symbolic patriotism, wearing the lapel pin, flying the flag, and so on, substitutes for what I would call lived patriotism, is that we don't acknowledge in general that the country has a claim on us. We don't do national service. We don't have a draft. We don't even have a national health.
Todd,
we don't believe in public schools.
Todd
anymore.
Gitlin, I'm sorry, I'm going to have to interrupt there. We'll continue this conversation after a brief break. We'll be right back with Which Way LA.
For more information about Which Way LA or to sign up for the free podcast, visit kcrw.com/whichwayLA. CD copies are also available. Call 1-800-600-KCRW.
I'm Lawrence O'Donnell, back with Which Way LA. Joining us now is Jabbar Magruder, sergeant in the Army National Guard, who has served one tour in Iraq. He is co-chair of the Board of Directors of Iraq Veterans Against the War. Sergeant Magruder, what has your military service and experience in Iraq done to your definition of patriotism?
That it would closely more, you know, reflect the what the previous guest has quoted from, you know, Samuel Clemens, that you love your country all the time. You love your country when it deserves. I mean, your government when it deserves it. Essentially, now is the time for us to actually question what our government is doing and is doing to our, you know, to the veterans and those who are serving, and to the people of Iraq.
Would you say, Sergeant Magruder, that you had a different notion of patriotism before military service than you do now?
Yes, I would. I would actually tie it to very specific symbols like the flag and other things, you know, like saying the Pledge of Allegiance, that those themselves were, you know, patriotic. But now, through my experience, I've learned that it is, you know, patriotic to dissent, and it's patriotic to say what is necessary to right your country in a time of crisis.
I want to share with you an anecdote from my years of working in the United States Senate. There was a moment in the Senate cloakroom, and I don't like to reveal names on these private versions of these conversations, but the Senate was debating another one of these anti-flag-burning bills, and one of the women senators, who'd never been in the military, was lecturing quite sternly on the point of how important this was, a Democrat, by the way, and saying that so many American soldiers had died for that flag. She was saying this to a military veteran who has a Purple Heart and severely wounded in war, who said back to her, "I don't know anyone I served with who thought they were dying for that flag." What would, if you had been there, what would your contribution to that conversation have been?
It would align exactly with that senator, is that that what is misconstrued, especially nowadays, is that the veterans are being used in some kind of sense to justify, you know, a sense of patriotism that simply does not exist. That it essentially, especially service members serve, their fellow members. They don't serve this overt sense of nationalism that, you know, some people have. And so right now we need to define what is patriotism.
So what do you think, Sergeant Magruder, is the right balance for us to have for society in our sense of responsibility to a collective and in specifically our sense of responsibility to military service?
Well, right now we have kind of a backwards sense of, you know, responsibility to military service, in the sense that we put military service on the disenfranchised. And for better or for worse, the military service is essentially one of the largest, you know, vehicles for social, you know, movement or social, climbing up the social ladder with our nation. And right now, it is those who essentially are at the bottom rung of it who are, you know, stuck in service. And even though, you know, some may argue that, you know, like there are, you know, middle class, you know, children who decide to join, you know, the service based upon, you know, a, you know, a sense of patriotism or whatever calling they may have, but for the most part, you're seeing, you know, inner city kids and rural kids from, you know, from the middle of America being, you know, brought into military service because this is, you know, because they don't have things that they can offer to, you know, the celebrities or to the well-to-do, you know, in military service.
Let's go back to Todd Gitlin, professor of journalism and sociology at Columbia University. Todd Gitlin, do we have something approaching a worldwide assessment of patriotism? What I'm getting at here is we can certainly point to some out-of-control examples of it in Germany in the 20th century, in Japan in the 20th century leading to World War II. We could certainly point to some positive demonstrations of it within the United States and elsewhere. But if we were to do the thought experience of just eliminating it as a force in the world, would we be better off in the last century?
I think if we were to cancel all nationalisms simultaneously and with equal zeal, I would say it would be a net gain for humanity, without a question. But I'm not for a unilateral disarmament of it. And in any case, you know, it's not a matter of arguing for and against. I referred before to a notion of patriotism of the heart. It's not something you can argue for. It's something that people feel when they feel attached to an idea of the nation, especially an idea of the nation in which they can see themselves. And so, to call for abolishing it is like calling for abolishing, romantic love. It's a waste of time.
Let's go back to John O'Sullivan, executive editor of Radio Free Europe, Radio Liberty. John O'Sullivan, going forward, when you talk about the British experience with patriotism and how it has waned in certain ways, what would you like to prescribe to Britain on the issue of patriotism?
Well, I think the first thing one should say is that patriotism is simply loving your country. Point of view which is compatible with all kinds of political positions you could take on anything from socialized medicine to the Iraq War. And I don't judge people on that basis. Secondly, I think it's also a false distinction to make between expressions of patriotism and patriotism itself. If I were to say, for example, I never wear an AIDS ribbon, but that's because that kind of thing can never really replicate my deep feeling about solving the problem of AIDS, I think people might very well reply, well, why can't you do both? And that's my feeling about these kind of distinctions between expressions of patriotism and the real thing. And finally, then there is this case of what is the British patriotism and the American one? As I said, the key point here is that the nation in both countries and in other English-speaking countries is in principle, open to newcomers of all kinds. Now, as other speakers have said, that promise has not always been honored. But it's often been honored earlier than some of us would expect. Now, I would say, for example, that far from Britain lagging behind in this area, the British Parliament had 3 Indian members in it between 1880 and 1914. It made a Jew prime minister in the 1870s. It elected a woman prime minister in 1979. The English-speaking world is not perfect. It has got its got its own flaws, but it is fundamentally an open and liberal expression of patriotism, a love of country in principle open to all that animates it. And although, as I say, and as others have said, that promise has not always been honored, it is still a promise that distinguishes it from other countries which have a narrower and more rigid conception of the nation and therefore of national loyalty.
Todd Gitlin, professor of journalism and sociology at Columbia University. I've had politicians tell me they don't wear the flag pin because they're not sure what it says to people. Since it has such a strong identification with Republicans, they're a little concerned that it might communicate not just communicate full support for the Iraq War policy, full support for tax cuts for the rich, and full support for privatizing Social Security. Is there a simple expression of patriotism that you think we could all agree on?
I can't imagine what it would be. I can understand that the Democrats of whom you speak would feel that the turf has been occupied, that by a Republican insistence that they're the ones who are the masters of the game, and so coming in and tagging along sort of makes them look reluctant. And this is a game I think that's idiotic and inimical to the spirit which should dictate that what a patriot does is to be measured by lived patriotism, by the actions. That's why, to me, neither the AIDS ribbon doesn't do it either, and I wouldn't, I'm not attracted to it any more than I am to a lapel pin. I'm interested in what people do, and I go back to something I was saying before that that the measure of patriotism, and I think Democrats ought to say this, although it can be awkward. The measure of patriotism is what you're doing for your country, and the notion that one can be exempt from public life, exempt from national service, exempt from public schools, exempt from public transportation, and at the same time brag about one's patriotism, with the gleaming pin, You know, this to me is a sign of decadence, actually, and the decay of patriotism.
I'd like to thank all of our guests, Sergeant Jabbar Magruder, Sergeant in the Army National Guard, who has served one tour in Iraq. He's also the co-chair of the Board of Directors of Iraq Veterans Against the War. Todd Gitlin, Professor of Journalism and Sociology at Columbia University. John O'Sullivan, Executive Director of Radio Free Europe. Gary Gerstle, Professor of History at Vanderbilt University. The producers of Which Way LA are Francis Anderton, Christian Bordel, Katie Cooper, Sonia Geist, Dan Konecki, and Gary Scott. The managing producer is Karen Radziner. The technical director is Mike Newport. Thanks also to the John Coltrane family. For more information about Which Way LA, visit kcrw.com/whichwayLA. I'm Lawrence O'Donnell, sitting in for Warren Olney. Join us again for Which Way LA on 89.9 KCRW.
Which Way LA is made possible in part by the Ralph M. Parsons Foundation, the Nathan Cummings Foundation, the Rosalind and Arthur Gilbert Foundation, and the John Randolph Haynes and Dora Haynes Foundation, which supports study and research into policy issues of the Los Angeles region.